I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love
and love to hate
all things fashion.
We're back again. Fashion Hags are back in the studio. Hi, friend.
New year, new episode.
Same us.
Same guys, same people. Took a bit of a brief hiatus.
Yeah.
There was some traveling. There was some holidays.
There was some traveling. There was a series of continents that were conquered.
All the way over.
You went all the way across ours,
pretty much.
You
went all the way
2/3 of the way across ours.
Mm-hmm. You drove over some mountains.
I went to an island and then to a mountain.
Yeah, there you go. That's not nothing.
It's not nothing. It was time for a hiatus.
Yes.
It was good. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, we're here.
Hopefully we're not just talking to the three of us.
Hopefully your subscriptions are still refreshing. Oh, man, oh, man.
So much has happened. There was a Christmas.
Yeah.
Holiday. There's New Year's.
Trips,
travel.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
Brian,
what about you? You just got back. Yesterday? Today?
Two days ago.
4 days ago.
There you go. Semantics. I went home for a week. The first time that I was cohabitating with my parents without my siblings. So just me and my parents.
That's since I was a child. That's a new beast.
Different.
Yeah.
That's weird. It was different. Yeah. Because before that, it was either all of us together or
just
me and my
brother.
Sister.
Yeah.
Because my sister lived at home.
Oh, right. Sure.
Or me and my brother were there, my sister was away or whatever. But it was just me and my parents, and it was really nice.
And the dog?
And the dog and the cat. The dogs and the cat. It was nice because I'm the oldest, so I never really got babied.
Right. Sure.
You know, so now that I was there just by myself,
you don't get that
alone
time.
What do you want for breakfast? What do you want for lunch? What do you want for supper? What do you want to do today?
You're like, French toast with whipped cream, please.
Yeah. So that was really nice. And I got to hang out with my grandparents. And I'm one of my best friends from high school and one of my cousins are getting married this year. And I'm doing their wedding dresses.
Oh, shit.
I was doing fittings while I was there, a little bit of work.
Consultations.
And doing a bit of research, of course, for new work. Mm. I got to go look through some photographs that my mamère's sister, so my great aunt, has. She has a huge trunk of photos that date back from the 30s to present.
Cool.
And it's all her family and them when they were younger. So I spent most of my time in the 60s and 70s era.
Of course.
Oh. The clothes are so good. I found the most amazing photos of my aunts and uncles. And it wasn't shocking to me. Shocking that these people who grew up in pioneer times who didn't have running water or electricity or anything. And they literally grew up on a farm in
the middle of nowhere.
Grew and killed and harvested
survived.
Everything that they ate.
Yeah.
They looked so contemporary for the time.
Huh.
Everything, the outfits are contemporary, the hairstyles, the makeup, the backgrounds in the photos, and it's really interesting that people would think that there would be a lot more of a traditional Métis look to everything, but I don't know.
It just looks like the 60s.
It just looks like the 60s and 70s, you know?
That's fun. Interesting.
So it's really nice that I can assert the fact that these people are modern people and they've always been contemporary.
Yeah.
Lots of good fur coats.
Time. I don't remember seeing any fur. A lot of the photos were taken during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of
The furs were in storage? So
the furs were in storage, probably. But one of my aunts, you can see through the ages, she goes from Jackie Kennedy, helmet hair to Cher hair to the perfect, Mary Tyler Moore kind of do.
Yep.
And just the perfect red lip, crazy green eyeshadow and the two piece sets.
Nice.
And all of that stuff. And there's an amazing photo of my mamère And she was probably like, I think she was probably like 14 in this picture, and she looks so chic.
That's so fun going through old photos of people you know now in a completely different context.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And being like,
different era, different age.
Like, damn, grandma. I love seeing stuff like that. It's so, like, seeing yourself in that, like, mm-hmm. saying, like, oh, shit, I, you know, look like, or that, you know, that's what I look like when I was in my teens. Or, like, you can see the family resemblance. I think that is so fascinating. I love that. Mm-hmm. Or when you're
very cool.
seeing your parents when they're kids, like images of your parents when they're kids and your aunts and stuff. Like, so cute. Like your life existed in a completely different way before any of us came along.
Yeah.
So it's so wild to think about like that. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Good trip. Was it minus 35 the entire time you were home?
It no, it wasn't crazy. Too bad.
Oh, that's good.
It was like the coldest it got was like minus 15.
Okay.
That's okay. Good. So that's fine.
I mean, it was when we got home, when we went to Jasper, it was minus 36, I think, the first day we were there. It didn't get warmer than minus 30 for the first like 5 or 6 days.
Indoors. Yeah.
Staying inside.
Had a lot of crokinole.
But the really fun part of the trip was I got to go out on the lake.
Oh, fun.
Ice fishing.
Well, my dad did a bit of ice fishing. And then I was helping my grandparents pull their nets, which is amazing. I think you would really like it. I don't know if you would like it very much, Abby.
I'd like to watch somewhere.
You'd like to watch. And I think Abby would be like with my mom, maybe, where
I'll
you're
be
like,
in the little shack.
You'd be in the shack, like stoking the fire and like making
I've been
tea
ice fishing when I was a kid. It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was super cool.
Mm-hmm.
So they do ice fishing with nets.
With nets, yeah.
I like didn't realize
the really
that.
Traditional way.
No way.
So you like, there's like, you set like, probably like maybe like 6 on a line, so you set it at one hole, and then it kind of goes all the way down, and you kind of like catch the net. You have to like fish for the big hook to pull it up and connect it, and then you go down, and then you have to like you put little posts in the ice.
Whoa.
And they all have numbers on them because then the game wardens, which is a whole other political thing that I shouldn't get into, will like come around and like see whose nets are whose and how long they've been in there and everything. Because if you leave them for too long, then all the fish will die, and that's like considered like bad practice.
Yeah. Killing a whole bunch of fish, I can see that.
Yeah. But it was really fun. I hadn't done it since I was a kid. And it's like back-breaking work.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, it's crazy.
It's labor.
And my grandparents are not, they're not old, but they're not young.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's difficult work to do when you're like a bunch of young guys, but when it's just my grandparents who go out and do it, it's like insane to me. Yeah. People like usually set up like 20 nets at once. Now my grandparents do like one line maybe and like fish that.
Wow.
So how many fish are you catching on like on one line, say?
On one net? Anywhere from like 20 to 40.
Really? That many? Oh, shit. That's cool.
And then in there, like, there's some fish that you can't sell because no one will buy them.
There's
a fish called a tulibee.
A what?
Tulibee.
Tulibee?
Oh, all right.
I like it. It's like this tiny little fish.
It's no good to anybody.
You eat it on the lake, but you don't sell it.
I see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, like, you'll cook it and you'll
just eat it there.
You'll fillet it and eat it on the lake, but you won't like sell it.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Mm. And then there's like these big nasty fish, jackfish.
Uh-huh.
They have these crazy fucking teeth.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was like trying to like pull the net because it like what they do is they like bite into the net and then they just flash around.
Oh, so they,
like,
sure. And they
always
rip
the net. So you have to like pry open their mouth and it's like they're still alive. Like I was like going to go open one's mouth and I was like, don't put your finger in there because we'll have to like.
Oh, it'll like bite your finger.
Yeah, we'll just have to like cut. We'll have to like cut the fish's head off to get your finger out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
God. And it's like minus 15 out on
it was minus 6.
River. Okay, that's not so bad.
Oh, that's
that's a manageable.
But it's like minus 6 without the wind chill. Yeah. So with the wind chill, it's probably a bit colder.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. Like you're literally, we were 3 kilometers out in the middle of a frozen lake. There was nothing around.
Yeah.
Us. So like,
oh man.
Yeah. You're like you set up the shack and the trucks like in front of the wind. So you stand behind that when you're pulling the nets and like
makes sense.
You like have to drill into the ice and.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
it was
fun.
Like super traditional shit. And I was, God. And of course I was out there like asking like who taught you how to do this and that and like, and
sure,
trying to get into that.
Story behind it. Yeah. And
Because when I was a kid, like, I danced so much that we, especially in the winter, like a winter, like the fall and the winter was like a big time for us to travel and perform places. So we never got to do any of that stuff.
Oh, sure. All your weekends makes and sense. Whatever were taken up by that then.
Or we were in school and you can't like go to at the lake at like 6 a.m. when you have to go to school.
No.
But it was really nice now that I'm older and I know the value of that knowledge. Because I don't really think I understood when I was
15,
younger.
You don't care.
Yeah.
You don't give a shit.
And now it's just like...
lame.
Yeah.
Something your parents do. You don't want anything to do with it.
And it's work. Ugh.
And it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Like my thighs were on fire for like a day and a half after.
Wow.
Yeah. Because you're just like... you're like...
Squatting and bending.
And pulling the net out of the water.
Oh, man.
A heavy, freezing cold, wet net.
Yeah.
Wow. Full of fish.
Full of fish.
Yeah, I can see how as a teenager you'd be like, nah,
not into it.
Oh, it's not glamorous at all. No. It smells like, you know.
No. That's cool. I'm stoked you got to go home and
that's great that you got to experience that now. And like you said, have the appreciation for it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Abu Dhabi, what about you?
You went all over the place. Yes, we flew to my parents' place in Switzerland, which was lovely. It's our last trip there. My dad's retiring and moving back to Canada. So my mom is also moving back to Canada because they come as a package deal. So it was our last time. My Aunt Sheila came down from Sweden. My brother and his wife came down from Copenhagen. We were there. And it was a house full of ding-dongs. It was great. Sheila brought her dog, who was delightful.
Peggy.
Check out, what's her Instagram for Peggy?
Peggy S. Dog.
Peggy DSG or something. I forget what it is. But it's great. Peggy's lovely.
I'm going to look it up so that we know.
Yeah. She's like this weird Spitz Danish-Swedish farm dog, which is its own breed. They look very similar to like a Jack Russell or a, what do they call them? A toy terrier? Rat terrier? Anyway.
She looks like a movie dog.
She's adorable.
It's Peggy DSG.
A Danish-Swedish garhund or some weird Swedish shit. But it was great. And we went up a mountain and we went to a chocolate factory and we ate a bunch of fondue and we went back to the city where I grew up. My parents don't live in Bern anymore, which is where I grew up. And we like walked around, visited our old haunts.
How big is Bern? Is it?
Yeah, maybe 250,000 people.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a decent size. It's the political capital of Switzerland.
Right.
The economic capital, they say, is Zurich.
Mm-hmm.
And then the diplomatic capital is Geneva. Because that's where a bunch of shit like the UN and a whole bunch of international organizations and nonprofits and stuff, they're all based in Geneva. But Bern is like where parliament is and...
for the country.
For the whole country.
For the country of Switzerland. I get it.
Yes.
Not like the world.
No.
Which is like Geneva.
They might think it is. I think they're pretty great.
I'm dying to go to Switzerland. It's like
it was amazing.
Top two places to, like international places to travel.
It's amazing. And nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
It's so expensive. And I honestly don't know the next opportunity that I'm going to get to go because we had free room and board and the use of cars and, you know, so we didn't have to pay for any of that stuff because we didn't have to eat out all the time. We had like a full house kitchen and stuff, right? So we didn't have to eat out all the time because it's so expensive. You think Vancouver's expensive? Switzerland ain't got nothing on Vancouver.
Yeah.
But it's lovely. And it was nice to like go back knowing that it was our last trip too.
Right, so you can really
soak it in and like go to the grocery store and get all my favorite food and like go to good restaurants. I know what to order. Like I'm not going to waste my time on a hamburger. Like I'm going to get the whatever traditional stuff I can and drink the beer and eat all the cheeses and because there's like we always joke that you cut in North America you go to like the cheese counter and there's Swiss cheese,
yeah,
the one kind, and you go to the Swiss grocery store and there are thousands. Literally thousands, and they're all different and they're all from different parts and some of them are like artisanal and some of them are mass manufactured. They're all delicious. They're all different, and that's just the Swiss ones because there's all the other European ones too, right? But we made sure we did it right, So that was good.
And then you guys had a little mini getaway.
And then we had a mini getaway, which was great. We ditched the kids with my parents and the family, and we went to London for 2 nights. I've never been to London in all my years of living in Europe. I've never been. Dave went once, like 15 years ago. And my mom had been recently, so she had some good information for us. We found this nice little hotel in Soho, and we got there on Boxing Day.
Good boy.
Woo! Like, I mean, just the stop we got off at the subway just happened to be like the one, like, I'm sure there's many shopping districts, obviously, but the like Oxford Circus, Oxford Street and Regent Street, which is like a huge deal, and just fucking people. Thank God we only had little backpacks with us and no kids, because if you had luggage and like even like the 7 minute walk was like fighting, and Dave and I got separated a bunch of times. We kept finding each other and like walking in the street and almost getting run over. And
so is Boxing Day a thing, or is it just because it's a holiday? It is, really
huge.
I wasn't sure about that.
Huge. I thought it originated there. I don't know. Maybe we should do an episode about Boxing Day sometime.
I don't know anything about it.
No, I just know it's a thing here and it's not a thing in the States.
Yeah,
but I always assumed we got it from the English. Or from the British.
I just assumed it was just a Canadian.
I thought it was an American invention.
I thought it was just a Canadian invention.
Yeah, because they don't have it in the States.
Yeah, they don't have it in the States at all.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess Canada is very influenced by England.
We have those ties, all those ties. So it was good. We did a little walking around. We had some food, had alcohol at every meal. It was great. Which unfortunately made our food bill go up significantly. Because the whatever the currency exchange is, not in our favor.
Not great.
Almost double, in fact. And you look at the price and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this drink is like eight pounds, $8. Like, no, it's 14.
16, almost. Yeah. So at least you don't have to tip, right?
No, thank goodness. So we tried to find some cool spots, some easy spots, and some nice spots. I went to Marks and Spencer and bought all new underwear.
Amazing.
If you are ever in England, I don't know the situation with the guys' underwear at Marks and Spencer's. Ladies, if you're ever in England, go get underwear at Marks and Sparks. That's what they call it.
They do?
Yeah. One of those weird British things. but I got all new bras, and I got all new underwear, and I came home and I threw out all my sad nursing bras that I've been hanging on to.
Goodbye.
I haven't nursed my kid in 3 months, still wearing them. Like, nope, you are. And I'm like, oh, this is still good. No, Abby, it's not. You've been wearing it like 2 or 3 days a week for 4 years. Like, it is not good. And it's like stretch out Spanx with fabric. It's not even like a structured bra. I think, no, just throw them. No one's going to want your gross bras, Abby. No, it's just throw them away. So I got those, and I was got new underwear, which is pretty great. I loaded up.
That's a good feeling.
And then I told myself, don't go into stores you have. So yeah. They have a Coast. I would love to go to Coast. They have whatever. They got all these other brands. I'm like, no, don't go there because you can just go.
Yeah,
don't go to Uniqlo because there's Uniqlo here. So I brought all new bras underwear, and then I bought a sweater at And Other Stories, which is like one of the H&M offshoots.
Oh, right. It's
an offshoots.
Thing, yeah.
It's a lovely sweater, and it was like $70, and it's great. I was very excited. And I have a black sweater in my wardrobe. And that was like the last missing, like, crucial piece that I'm like, how do I don't have a black sweater?
I don't have a black sweater.
Me neither. Like,
but I wear a lot of, well, mind you do too. Like, I wear a lot of black. I wear black more than I wear brown or blue.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen you in brown.
No, I don't do brown.
I don't do brown either.
No.
The only brown I do is like a nice leather.
I think I have brown
shoes.
Yeah. That's the closest I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Like even my purse is like a gray brown.
Yeah.
That's the closest I'm going to get. I have a pair of boots and they're also
slate
gray brown.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there we go. We're good. And then like we went to the Tate, which is a big modern art museum, and a bunch of shit that was fantastic. Mondrian and Kandinsky and all these famous, and then a whole bunch of just super weird
shit.
So many things that just looked like poo. Like big turds. Some of them were made of ceramic. Some of them were made of metal. Some of them were made of fabrics. Like they're just whatever. And they were all, I don't even know what they meant. Like Dave pointed out at the end of our, like we're walking through, and it's free. There's specific exhibitions that you pay to get into that have famous pieces or whatever, or a touring exhibition or something. But the whole thing is free, essentially. So we just walked around. And then by the end, Dave's like, this is exhausting. Because it's not like classic art where you look at it and you can appreciate it for being a beautiful sculpture, a beautiful painting, or whatever. Yeah. You have to like think, like, what the fuck
what
is
are you?
This? What are you saying? What does this mean? Where are you coming from? What are you made of?
It was, Why are
like
you made
mentally
at all?
Yeah. Very taxing to go to these. It's just that's not our cup of tea necessarily. These like hyper modern weird pieces that take up a room, and you're like, you're literally just bags of stuffing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it just looks old and dirty.
Yeah.
It's but weird. Is it art, Eddie? But is it art?
But is it art? So, I'm happy we went and we did see some cool shit. Saw a bunch of Dali and all this bunch of surrealist stuff and Dada stuff, which I love. And like the early 20th century stuff I'm super into. It's the like everything after like 1990. And I'm like, huh? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But it was good.
When art became anti-art.
Yes.
And remember when Doug was on the podcast, former guest?
Mm-hmm. Good old Doug.
Talking about how like technique was thrown out the window and how mm-hmm. technique was no longer like
yeah
the signifier of good art.
Yes, of value and mm-hmm. of significance. Absolutely. So that was good. And then like we were tired after that walking around. So we went back to our hotel and like, oh, well, because we only had like one full day. We had like 2 half days and 1 full day. And I'm like, oh, well, we could go do something. And then we got into bed. We got a bunch of snacks just at a store and just brought them back home or back to the hotel and just ate a bunch of snacks in bed. And they were like, wait, what should we do now? And I'm like, there's an HDMI cable to the TV. We can just watch Netflix. So we watched 6 or 7 episodes of The Crown.
Wonderful. In London.
One in London.
We could go to like the Tower of London. Blah, blah,
go to
blah,
Buckingham blah, Palace.
There we can just sit in our hotel and then watch 6 episodes in a row of a show.
And be uninterrupted.
Never pants on. It was great. A bunch of snacks in bed.
That is a nice vacation.
You never get a chance to like... Do you want another one? Do you want to watch another one?
Yeah.
Do you want to watch another one? Because it's like you can barely fit in the one.
Yeah.
Before you have to stop or before you're too exhausted and you got to go to bed or something. So that was fun.
That is a luxurious
and it was appropriate.
Completely, yeah.
And we've since finished season 2 of The Crown and it's fantastic.
Speaking of The Crown, Karen Kilgariff, who's one of the hosts of the My Favorite Murder podcast mm-hmm. that I'm in love with.
Yes.
She had a tweet over Christmas and who obviously watched the entirety of the second season of The Crown like we did. And she says, I'm ending every conversation now from now on, like in homage to The Crown, I'm ending every conversation from now on with who else knows about this? And that will be all. So now, Chris, my husband and I now on our text, all of a sudden it's like, who else knows about this? Like, he's like, what do you want to do for dinner? I'm like, I don't know, pick up this or that or whatever. And he's like, well, they're out of... you know,
zucchini or whatever.
Or sure. It's like, who else knows about this? He's like, what do you mean? Who else knows about what? I'm like, oh, that will be all. It feels like the right way to end a conversation.
Oh, I'm great. Yeah. I want one of those bells.
Yeah, those bells are nice.
Get a fuck off bell. Come take this person away from me.
And have you seen it the second season?
Of course.
Yes, he was what I devoured think before
it.
All of us.
He
devoured it in like 4 days.
Her line when she meets the Prime Minister when he gets wheeled in on his mm-hmm. spoiler
his
alert
gurney.
He gets wheeled in on his gurney.
Spoiler alert! It happened in the past, like 60 years ago.
Oh, I mean from the show. Because yeah. The line that she says in this show about she's been in power, she's been the queen for 10 years, and she's gone through 3 prime ministers, and she calls it a confederacy of quitters.
Oh, yeah,
and so I was like,
a confederacy off. Of elected quitters.
High kick.
It was such a good line. I was like, gotta remember that line. Confederacy. These just highly powerful, white, established, educated,
aristocratic.
Yeah.
And none of them can quit this job.
Not one.
They pulled her out of her, like, 7 months pregnancy. Like, she's up, being healthy and being pregnant and giving herself some time to raise the heir of their commonwealth.
Yeah.
And has to come back for his confederacy of quitters. Oh, I thought it was such a good line.
So great.
It's awesome.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
Well, that was me.
Well,
And what about you?
I nothing.
Nothing. Family stuff. Hiding inside while it's freezing up in the mountains.
Yeah. Just a couple really nice, we had a really good visit at home. It was so nice to get home. We were there for a while. I had to work the last week that we were there, but it's like, get up in the morning and stay in your pajamas. And
there you go. Work for a few hours and there you go.
It was nice. And then my mom would make some delicious breakfast and make coffee and think, well, I don't want to go.
This is pretty good.
But what I was going to say is that we went to the Women's March the other day.
Yes. Was past Saturday.
Saturday.
was great. We met our friend Madison Reed, who is at Only Child Apparel. Check out her Only Child Apparel for some
on Etsy. Yeah,
very cool feminist lady power
t-shirts
and
wears.
Pens and pencils and pins and just yeah. some cool shit. But it was great. It was fucking freezing cold.
Oh man, it was cold. And so windy, so rainy.
So windy and so rainy. We ended up bailing a little bit early because it was so cold and so windy and so rainy.
There's a lot of speakers to get through and we ended up having to,
jump
hightail out of there.
We stayed for almost 2 hours though, which was sort of the amount of time that I had
allotted
planned for this.
Yes.
And, but yeah, it was good. It was nice to see good signs out there, good speakers. I can't remember what her name is, but she wrote this amazing, she was one of the speakers and she wrote this amazing poem. She was the girl who was a sultan on the sky train.
Or something.
Yes, yes.
She was a young Muslim girl. She's like 18 or something.
Yeah, and she's a poet. And she was assaulted on the sky
verbally
train.
Verbally and physically assaulted on public transit here by a white
supremacist.
Piece of shit. Mm. Man.
So she wrote the most amazing, like,
I was fully tearing up.
Me too.
Yeah.
Amazing poem. And you could hear her tearing up and, like, getting choked as she's reading it and did not let it stop her. She just powered through. It was like this fierce, like, call to action. And
I won't let this destroy me and I forgive you.
And it was about forgiveness. Yeah. And it, I mean, tears, big time tears. And so after that, I was like, okay, like, we're ready to go. We're ready to march. And then I was like, okay, our next speaker will be this. And I was like,
our next speaker.
So it was kind of too bad.
Intersectionality takes so much time.
Oh my God, Abby.
I know, we stayed as, we're like, everyone, you know, we want to hear everybody.
Sorry.
Evan blew the sound.
Yeah.
No,
it's
it was
so
great.
Hard to, like, stay and be present and participate and, like, when you can't feel your feet after a while and, you know, everyone deserves to be heard and have their voice and be present and, you know, deserves that
respect.
And
it's such a complicated, you know, issue because it's a million issues.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway.
It's like you're pulling through a net.
Yes.
You're pulling through the net and you're caught in the back and it like you're like your earring is caught and you're
and you see
like,
a thing that you're really interested in the distance and you're like, yes, yes. And then you see another thing on the other side.
Also that,
I want that too. Yeah. So it's really, I think, like, you know how we were talking before about having an eco recipe and how you treat your consumption of clothing and
how you create it for your life.
For your own life.
Yeah.
I feel like there's
a feminist recipe.
There's a feminist eco recipe as well. Like, you have to sort of see a couple different visions and
you got
to
prioritize.
But, I mean, there's not enough time in the world to do and be present for all of it. It's impossible.
No. Mm-hmm. But you go to something like that and you hear from all these different people from different parts of society and different jobs and different contexts and things. And then you do realize, hey, that does affect me.
Yes, that's true.
You know, like you didn't think that women who are, like there was one woman from, I forget the word for it, but like temporary workers who come and work like a lot of nannies and a lot of home care workers and a lot of service industry people that come from Asia and Europe and
Africa. Make your hospital food and they take care of your
exactly.
kids.
So they try to, and how that affects them and how pay and daycare and all those things affect them and then how that trickles down to everybody else.
Yeah.
It trickles around. It doesn't even trickle down. It just trickles all over the place. And you're just like, oh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
So, you get, listening to all those voices was, you know, illuminating. And then there's just people are just, you're like, yes, I agree so much.
I'm with you
what
specifically.
You
yes.
You are talking to me.
But it was good. I'm glad we went.
Yes.
It felt appropriate to go and like, you know, raise your fist and be present.
Be and there and clap and take up space.
Mm-hmm, and fill your head with all the rage.
All the right things. All the right kind of rage.
Yeah.
In a world where everybody has so much rage. For stupid shit.
Yeah.
People get their knickers in a knot for the dumbest shit. It was nice to actually get your knickers in a knot for something
worthwhile.
Legit.
Agreed.
And it was nice to see a bunch of kids, bunch of dudes, bunch of old people, bunch, you know, like people from every job, from every race, like there was just such a mix of every kind of human and it was great.
Yeah, it was good. I'm glad we went.
Yep.
We should probably.
I guess we should talk about stuff.
It's half an hour.
Like halfway through.
I mean,
it's been a while. Kids.
It's been a while. I know. We haven't chatted in so long. Well, Evan, why don't you take the floor on this one?
Because this was my idea.
Mm. I'm going to let you be the expert on this one because I'm a little rusty on this topic. But
okay,
go ahead.
Let's do it.
So today we're going to be discussing, if you haven't read the title of the podcast yet, the demise of the fashion magazine, the traditional print fashion magazine you get on the newsstand. In maybe the last 5 years, the presence and the power of like the print fashion magazine has kind of waned with the development of online content and publications like Vogue really taking up space on like an online platform, with them really like pushing that online content with like all of their the interview, all of their cover stars, like the 22 question type deal, and like they've really
There's added content that's outside of the magazine that they're constantly creating.
Yeah, like getting that kind of connection with your consumer that's impossible to do in print.
Once a month.
Yeah, exactly. With like a limited time frame.
That you have to write in advance.
Exactly. And like then everything can feel dated by the time it reaches the customer.
Just changed it for like across the board. Of every kind.
Oh yes, it's not just the big guys. It's like,
and it's not just fashion.
Yeah, and it's taken over magazines in general.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And newspapers. Yeah,
yeah, but just for the sake of our parameters,
our podcast. Yes.
We
are important.
Yeah,
what about me?
We're not going to talk about like
we're going to talk about the New York Times
or like Fortune magazine.
Yeah, sure.
What's that huge like
Boomers
like US like
Wired.
Car, like a car mu- car Wired. Magazine
yeah
or Technology Today or Scientific
Gear
blah, blah,
Man
blah.
Popular Mechanic
yeah
yes. Gear Man what is
I
Gear
I don't know some with cars I don't know some I don't read obviously
anyway
like just in the last year. Most of the information I'm talking about today is just for Condé Nast because for some reason they like to tell everyone what's going on inside their company. I don't know if Condé Nast
they're the beast.
Traded.
They're the monster.
Yeah.
They must be.
I think they are.
They've got to be. They're so huge.
Yeah. And because
they
are.
How many titles do they have? I don't know, like 500?
Probably, yeah. Like globally, probably close to 500 titles.
Oh, God,
just in.
So many.
And I'm keeping it to North American magazines as well. Just in the last year, Condé Nast shut down three of their. They shuttered three of their print publications that it will, like these magazines will no longer be offered in print.
Hmm.
Lucky Magazine, Details, which is a men's
style really?
Magazine, and Teen Vogue.
I heard that,
which was a big shocker.
Yeah, considering how well it seemed to be.
It went from being monthly to quarterly to not being in print at all, and it's only going to exist digitally.
That is interesting. Crazy. Anyway.
Yeah. It's just like, because Teen Vogue was kind of creating the new template for the fashion magazine, being more hip to the social current and offering content to a younger audience and being more socially broad, should we say. Mm. And it was really interesting for that, like, it was really interesting kind of to see that maybe a younger generation doesn't buy magazines anymore. And that's probably like everything, like when you can read articles and everything on your phone, I guess there's no reason to go and pick up a $7 magazine.
Or you just don't see the benefits.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't see the advantages.
It's like,
we
grew up
did it
on fashion magazines.
Yeah.
Like that was like how I devoured fashion.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the only way.
That's all I had.
And fashion television.
Yeah. Yeah, fashion television.
And that was it.
And style.com for like a little bit.
I didn't even have that when I was growing up
because
we're just that much older.
Yeah. Like,
you know?
Style.com came around when I was in probably seventh grade.
It would not have occurred to me when we first got the internet at our house. It would not have occurred to me to look up
fashion
on the internet.
Yeah.
No, because the information wasn't there.
No.
It's not like now where the pictures are there, so you see them. Like, there's no pictures there.
Yeah.
There's nothing to see.
I think especially because the industry has changed so much, it's like, fashion,
even in the last 2 years, for crying out loud.
like fashion, when the internet was starting to become a thing that was in everybody's homes, the fashion industry wasn't connected to entertainment, and it wasn't like,
no, it was its own thing,
sport anymore.
Yeah,
at that point it was still insider, an industry. It was insular. Like the photographers were on the front row and not all the editors, and there was no celebrities in the front row kind of deal.
Right.
And it had its own system changed. It had its own system of dissemination and schedule that was very rigid.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't deviate. Everybody showed at the same time. Everybody got the pictures at the same time. All the magazines came out 6 months. You know, they appeared in the stores. Like, there was no deviation mm-hmm. from that schedule.
And the magazine also had the power because they were the ones who were delivering style and fashion criticism to the public.
And styling and, yeah.
And, like, the image, basically. Like, the image of the time. And then when the internet came around, that's when the blogger sphere started to happen, mm-hmm. and everyone could be a critic or not a critic and
have input or access.
That whole old system on its head.
And I always think that's so
it was strange. So one directional for so long.
Yeah.
Right? It just went, information flowed one way and that was it.
I think it's weird to think about people like, well, just about the blogosphere as it's annoyingly referred to. But things like blogs like Style Rookie.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's like a nobody, but there's so many nobodies with an opinion that didn't go to fashion school or didn't go to journalism mm-hmm. school, who didn't have sure. that sort of
the or a personal experience in or with knowledge. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, it sort of democratized how you consume it, which was kind of cool, but it also was still one person's kind of view, and then once those start to be successful, then you still get ads, and someone is still controlling the ads, just like any magazine. So now you have a whole bunch of different sources that may or may not have
various levels
have
of it
right.
Yeah.
You don't know what kind of research they're doing. You don't know what kind of
background they have.
Like, usually when you're printing something or you're reading something in print in Vogue or in Harper's or in whatever, it's backed up by
it's legitimized.
Its own history. Yeah. It's legitimized. Yeah. And it's not like reading a newspaper article where it has to be a peer reviewed kind of a thing. Like, it has
to be
something
that, sure, and two sources and checked and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, you can't just pull the shit out of your ass. You got to know what you're talking about. But I think with blogs, you can just sort of pull it out of your ass, mm-hmm. and who cares if it's right or wrong?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a weird thing to negotiate of like.
Well, a lot of part about fashion is opinion.
Yes, that's
right.
True.
Like,
that's
it's true. Not like there's no facts to check. Do you like it or not? Yeah. Do you think it was good or not?
Yeah, that's
you know?
True. That's
I mean,
true.
There's things like references that not everybody will get, and there's things that, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not a seasoned fashion follower, you're not going to know.
Fashion academic.
Yes. Yeah, you're not going to know that this person's referencing X, Y, and Z, be it from the fashion industry or from whatever
history, yeah.
art,
yeah.
whatever. But you can still have an opinion about it and not know anything. It's like when you watch The Simpsons and you watch it as a kid and it's entertaining on one level.
Yeah.
And then you watch it as an adult and there's all these other layers afterwards that you now get, and references and jokes and, you know, double entendres and, you know, things that you get later on. The fashion industry is just like The Simpsons.
It's just like this. I didn't understand a lot of Mr. Burns until I watched Citizen Kane in film school.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh, I got to go back and watch all
now
of this.
Now I'm going to need it. I got
the
a whole
Mr.
new
Burns
lens on that. Yes.
Hilarious.
Oh,
yeah, you're
man.
Right. But it is a weird shift of like, oh, we're legitimate because we've been doing this for 80 years.
Yeah.
And you're just some random 14-year-old.
And we know all the people.
And we know everyone. Mm-hmm. And all the things in all the places. I think it's good for those magazines to have that kind of push in the ass and mm-hmm. be like,
can you imagine if they didn't?
Yeah.
You know, and they were still up on that weird pedestal
mm-hmm.
and untouchable and infallible.
But it's impossible.
It wouldn't work.
I think it would have, like, the fashion industry would have collapsed and toppled in a different way, but it would have happened anyway.
Yeah. Something would have had to give.
Something
sure.
would have given. Yeah.
And something else would have had to have taken its place. And that's not what we have now.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Condé Nast is not publicly traded. It's privately owned.
Oh, interesting.
There you go.
It's owned by a company called Advance Publications, which owns, you know,
a slew of other things.
Sure.
It's a big deal, but it's not publicly traded.
Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that's really interesting about the, like, how fashion pre-internet was, like, the everything was kind of put through the Vogue filter, the Harper's Bazaar filter, the whatever filter. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you were given that publication's idea of what fashion was at that moment. And then once...
what they deemed important, what they deemed influential, what they deemed, you know,
mm-hmm. And then
pretty.
Once the internet kicked in, like the customer or the consumer or the fashion advocate...
the receiver.
The fashion advocate or whatever could... put their own message out, and it was like the consumer could speak back to the brand in a completely different way.
Especially because there's essentially no difference between Harper's Bazaar and Vogue.
Yeah.
They are the same thing.
Yeah.
The same people do the same things with the same clothes.
They use the same photographers.
Same models.
Same models. It's the same ads. It's the same campaigns.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously some people will probably disagree.
Yeah.
But if you were green, if you're just some rando off the street blowhard and you looked at a Harper's and a Vogue magazine, you'd be like, yeah,
If you took the title off,
you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Take the about or like message from the editor page.
Yeah.
Take out. Anything
branding
mentioning
or whatever.
The people yeah. and the publication and the company,
it's
whatever.
The same.
Yeah, just take those, you know, 4 or 5 pages out.
Yeah.
They're the same magazine.
Yeah. And they're also constrained by the physical limitations of the medium, right?
Yes. Yeah, pages. That's true.
The size of the paper, the number of pages you can have, the number of ads you need to have to sustain it.
The time it takes to make it,
the cost it takes to make it, to distribute it. Because there's so much lead time for a magazine and materials and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's none of those. The only parameter you have is bandwidth and time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing the online stuff.
And having a really good graphic designer.
And yeah, and exactly. Yeah. And what you made and the choices you have in your aesthetic mm-hmm. and what you mean to do.
This dude named Mr. Mulrennan, he works for Condé Nast and Glamour magazine specifically. He talked about when they reformatted Glamour from like the regular size 8.5 by 11 fashion magazine to a larger format, which they call like a luxury format magazine, which is
okay. Is it like W?
Yeah, like W probably, yeah. A larger size. The whole idea about that was because that old version of the magazine was designed that way so that you could fit it into a handbag.
Mm-hmm.
And now that people can read magazines on their phone, there was really no point to have that anymore. And they wanted to more presence on the newsstand.
Interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah. And like they kind of took that idea. And then it ended up just not working anyway because I guess because it looks prettier doesn't mean the content's going to be any better.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that people are going to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you still can't fit it in your bag.
And other magazines have done the opposite. They've gone smaller.
Yeah, like there's Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue and Lulu. Was that? Is it even Lulu still around? Yeah, it's a Canadian one, but it's the same thing. It's thicker, but it's smaller. It's almost like Reader's Digest size.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it that small?
Maybe a little bit bigger than that. But I mean, between Reader's Digest and a typical magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was smaller. And it was nice. I like the little ones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like those little ones too.
The big ones feel bigger.
I don't know. It's just like I went to Chapters yesterday. I went to the magazine section, and it was really interesting to see like how little space was taken up by traditional magazines like Vogue.
Yes, absolutely.
And it was
they don't exist anymore.
Like they just like the circulation is down. Maybe like or maybe their circulation is different. They don't go to as many bookstores or anything.
Sure.
Like that. They go more to just like supermarkets and what have you and gas stations, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I get my Vogue at the gas station. Thank you very
that's
much.
That's where I got mine growing up. but like it's weird that
I used to love going to Chapters and like sitting in the magazine section. It was a huge giant thing and you had all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And magazines I've never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
That'll probably only last for like 4 or 5 issues. But like that little
or weird blip. Foreign ones.
Yeah.
Oh,
and like
man.
It's really interesting to see like the different formats and like the different kinds of paper that they use to like try and differentiate
to stand out
from, like a glossy kind of look.
Yeah.
Even just like the cover shots, the way that they the front page, what that front page looks like. Or even like I don't know if they used to do this as much, I doubt it, but there'll be now like Vanity Fair or even W, depending depending on what the theme or their sort of main focus of that issue is, they'll have like 4 or 5 different covers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is a way of
people to buy multiple issues.
Buy multiple issues or just be something different. Just something to talk different about. That looks something, yeah. You know, not like the next one that's right beside it. I don't know. It's weird. I can't remember the last time I bought a magazine. I guess when I'm on the ferry, sometimes I'll buy a magazine. Mm. But usually I'm more interested in like a Vanity Fair, which is slightly different than Vogue. It's a little more political. I don't know. I mean, I'm out of touch with all of them. I guess I had a subscription when I was in high school to like...
And for so many years, I never read the articles.
Yeah.
You know, like you just look at the pictures and you look at the shopping pages and you read the short, the one page things and the makeup reviews or whatever. So I don't know if it's always been like this, but I don't, like now that I'm older and I'm reading the magazines and people, places like Teen Vogue that are doing important things and writing important things that should be read. And it's not just like fluff pieces about an actress or a story from old Hollywood or whatever. Like there's more meat on those bones. I read through the articles.
But you're also not reading them in hard copy anymore either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
I get like the Twitter link and then I read it through
Twitter. Yeah, I see on someone else's Facebook that they recommend it and then I go and check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird shift. But it makes sense. Everything is fucking content. You need content 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you have it and if there's something that in, you know, one of 100 Instagram posts that Vogue puts out in a week, one of them will interest you and then you can click on it and go to the online thing. It's not going to make you go and buy the magazine though.
No.
Like I'm curious, like what would they do to get you to buy the magazine? I'm trying to even think of if there's an incentive or if it would even be worth it. Like, you know, breakfast cereals, put a toy in there, make a kid
Buy
the toy. What would you do with a magazine? There'd be nothing because you can't compete with
and all the old like videos I would and, buy it you
know, songs.
I would buy it for editorials.
Yeah.
Or even the ads. Like I would buy it for the ads because I was the only place I could see a Chanel ad.
Yeah.
Was in these magazines. Mm-hmm. They're not in newspapers. They're not on TV. They're not in other, you know, media. So it would be the only place I could see these cool ad campaigns with the It Bag or whatever.
See what was kicking around in Carl's brain.
Yeah, see what other weird Jürgen Teller shit Mark Jacobs is up to. No, thank you. So, yeah.
But it's cool now, too, because, like, there are, coming back to the sort of democratization of it and giving, basically of consumers being like, well, fuck this. I want to see what I want to see. I'm going to go and make it. So now you have all kinds of these weird, small, sort of fringy, alternative online content sources.
Oh, sure.
That are way more interesting. Again, you got to go search around or find them.
Yeah, or way more niche or something, you know? Like, there's a there's a Jim Goth specific local magazine that's just about Jim Goth things. Not even goths, Jim Goths.
What? Oh,
sport are you goth? Serious?
Really?
Sport goth, yes.
Sport, yeah.
Or whatever you call it.
What is it called?
Just wear black
sport,
Adidas.
Is it sport goth?
I don't know what it is. But you can be so targeted and so specific and you don't have to fill 100 pages.
Yeah.
If you only want to do 20 pages.
Is it
goth? Or the equivalent or whatever, right? If on a magazine, because you can't really even measure it in pages.
Right. Is it goth leisure? Did Maybe. I just coin that term?
Oh, I think you did.
Oh, shit.
You knew what I was
saying. Hashtag goth leisure.
So, but it's, you know, it's, or you can just have magazines like, I know it's not specifically a fashion magazine, but like Kinfolk.
Yeah.
That are their own. That
Monte Cristo.
Yeah, that incorporate their own, that have fashion elements, but are much more lifestyle.
By the way, thanks Monte Cristo Magazine for the shout out.
And
for Charlie Demers for the shout out.
It's a local magazine up here. Talk about niche magazines. I think it's owned and operated by the jeweler Monte Cristo.
That's fine.
Ooh. Oh.
It's a pretty magazine.
It's a beautiful magazine. And they have interesting things in it, art and culture and things. But I think it's interesting now that you can
find something. If there's something weird that you like, you can probably find it somewhere. You have to search for it.
But it's out there.
It's out there somewhere.
Good old internet.
You have your pitfalls, but you also have your advantages.
Do you guys remember in high school, I don't know if you guys had this project, but we had to like make a magazine. It was in French class, I think, that we had to make a magazine. You had to make a French magazine and write like one article about this, one article about that. And you could pick whatever kind of magazine you wanted to make. And, you know, it was a French class. It was about translating and speaking French and writing in French and blah, blah, blah. But you'd have to like go and cut out pieces, can like literally collage because it didn't exist to print the same way. Like you'd have to cut stuff out and then photocopy it and then
you just drag and drop.
Yeah, you can't use, there's no Illustrator to use to make your own magazine. I think those days are probably over. It would be all
the day of the zine in the 90s where you created, especially, you know, bringing back women's movement and stuff like Riot Girls and stuff and the indie music and alt music stuff and creating your own little zines and things. And Dave's still got a bunch of weird like Weezer zines that he got back in the day that you...
It's all weird drawings and collages and photocopies.
And they're photocopies of photocopies of photocopies, and they somehow still get to send, like, Dave got them from the fan club that was based who knows where in the States, and they mailed them out, and they only made copies of this and that. And, I mean, that was pretty cool.
That is grassroots.
That is grassroots shit.
But, I mean, the same
thing. But it's the same thing. But it's the same thing now, just on your computer.
And they just look way more polished because there's way more options.
Everyone can download Illustrator and... figure
out
their
shit
in graphic
or
design.
Some shit.
Do it in fucking PowerPoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
Save it as a PDF, whatever.
Yeah, and email that bad boy out to all your friends.
Yeah, anyone can get a Squarespace site now and run a blog. And,
right?
And,
yeah.
As long as you have a great point of view and you can write a couple of lines of
and make
copy.
It compelling and interesting and
then
stand out in some way.
It's very easy to get some traction.
Do you guys have a favorite weird fringe? I don't even go there most of the time.
I'm trying to think of what do I even read?
I feel like I have a couple, but I just know them from the images they share on Instagram. I don't really know the name, which is awful.
I recently discovered Them.
Oh, that's the new one.
It's the new like LGBTQA
by
whatever.
Condé Nast, yeah.
By Condé Nast.
And it's online only.
You're kidding. Them, period. I just started following
them
on Instagram.
US.
Huh. And it's just like... awesome images of all kinds of people doing all kinds of things. They're just promoting visibility, accessibility, voice, like different voices, different lifestyles. You know, and it's great. Their Instagram feed is awesome. It's very powerful and uplifting and informative. And that's not even that old. I think it's only, I forget who told me where I heard about it. Maybe Cameron Esposito's podcast. She has a podcast called Query where she interviews LGBTQ people. Maybe I got it from her. But it's great. That's my new one I've been reading. And that's the thing. I really only look at it through Instagram.
Right.
Like, I don't go to the website and look at it unless something's linked specifically. But I just look at what they – or follow on Facebook. Like, I was so anti-outside content on Facebook for so long. It's like, no, I just want to follow the people and what they say and what they post. I'm like, but I'm not going to get my news here. I'm not going to get my dog videos here.
Oh, really?
But now – but now it's, I don't have time to read through all my blogs. I don't have time to go to all these individual websites. Yeah.
That's mostly what I use Facebook for now is like following local news, following news in Alberta, following Canadian news, following, what do you call it? New York Times.
Yeah.
And I'll just scan The Onion, obviously.
Yes, Reductress.
I mean, Reductress is so good.
All your important news outlets like Reductress.
Yeah, that's mostly what I use Facebook for now.
I'm already there. I might as well have it in my feed.
Yeah.
And cut loose all the
pictures of
ding-dongs. I'm like, people from high school? Yeah. My mom's friends from who wear no... unfollow.
Yeah, I don't need this.
I don't need you in my life.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All you weird buy-sell groups that I follow for like kids and home stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, it's fine.
Oh, Aritzia has 20 new items for sale. Yeah,
great.
I know.
Great.
Yeah. Those buy sell ones get so tiring so quickly. Oh my God.
Oh my God. And also Facebook, your marketplace fucking sucks. The way that anyway, this is a side rant.
Total sidebar?
Or just the way that the Facebook has. Like, I used to just follow your groups and you could like, first of all, rip Facebook group app. Rip group app because you were amazing. And they don't even do the group app anymore, which I'm choked about. But the stupid marketplace where it like amalgamates all your different buy sell, all your different selling groups into one feed. I was like, no, I don't want to look at everything at once. I want to look at this specific group at a time. And I can go and look at it one group at a time. But it's like, it's all mixed up. I don't like it. And there's always a weird notification on my phone. Fuck you when you're red number one. Suck my dick.
Suck it. Suck it, Facebook. You heard it here from Marketplace.
I don't like it.
I don't like it. Bring back you.
Groups app. Where I can unfollow everything in my feed and just go to my groups app. Anyway. That's what got me riled up, apparently.
Fucking Facebook.
Oh, boy.
I remember when I first started on it, reluctantly, in 2009 or 8.
Yeah, I think I started in 2007.
Maybe. My friend was like, you gotta get on it. It's so, it's like you can keep in touch with everybody. It's super great, blah, blah, blah. And in the early days
of MySpace is dead.
Yeah.
Facebook's the new Friendster. Whatever.
And that's really all it was for all. That was kind of nice.
Yeah.
But now I'm.
Now it's this whole thing.
It's the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
But it is a good place to throw a surprise party for someone. I'll give there it you that. Go. If you're throwing a surprise party, it does make
organize
it easy.
That on Facebook.
Just make that event private.
Yeah. Don't include the person you're surprising. Makes it easy to coordinate. Oh, man. Is that all we have to say about this then?
I don't know. Do you have anything else? Do you have anything to add?
Do you have a closing statement?
Closing arguments?
It's not a bad thing.
I don't think so because the fact that the traditional magazine is kind of faltering, it leaves space open for something new to emerge, like them.
Yeah. And it's not going to look like this forever.
No.
Something else will come of it and some new thing will come along and we'll have implants in our eyeballs or whatever. And yeah. The next thing, who knows what's going to be.
Do you think it'll ever go away? Do you think print magazines will ever fully disappear?
No.
I don't think
so. I don't know. I could see it. You just have it on your iPad.
But
or
I just
or whatever, it, some sort
not,
of device.
I don't think it's going to be the same.
Yeah.
I don't like the people who make the shift early will survive and the people who try and do it the old way.
It could also have something to do with a bunch of the older people just dying off.
I was going to say,
if the people who grew up with them are no longer on this planet, who will buy them?
There's always going to be the weirdos who have the nostalgia for the old days like me.
It's true. But will that be enough to carry?
To carry an industry? No.
Or to carry, the cost of having one.
I think like the
certainly not, it will not maintain the industry at its size.
The idea of the monthly magazine as it is now, I don't think it's going to sustain itself. But maybe a beautiful quarterly book that you can buy and like there's a lot more time put into it and it's much more of like.
I would love to see Vogue as a quarterly in a hard copy and online content
and,
that is separate.
And like
that is
hard opinions.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the thing.
It's really soft.
It's soft. Like,
and kind of lame and fuzzy and boring.
Yeah.
And all there's no, like,
no hard hitting anything.
And there's no critiques in the magazine.
No.
Like, they don't go, Tim Blanks doesn't write an article in the magazine where he, like, dishes on a bunch of shit and has like
or
this
Sarah
sucks
Maurer,
this is great or yes
any of the great like
yeah
they've been
online.
Given
they do online or yeah. They do in the newspapers New York Times and the
Washington
British
Post,
ones and stuff too like they that's where you get the real opinions that are influential and important
and yeah I think it's also about including younger newer voices more diverse voices in that group of fashion criticism because
what do you mean, rich old white?
Rich old white
men?
Women
yeah.
And white men?
Yeah. Their time is up.
I mean, like I really like looking at Robin Givens' point of view because she's a woman of color. Of course, I'm gonna probably always
sure be interested
side with
in what
her.
She has to say. Absolutely.
But she, I feel like she maybe the way that she writes for the way that the fashion industry used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Because she had to write for that audience.
Yeah, and that is her point of view. She's a very classic dresser. The way that she is herself, but I do really align with a lot of the things she has to say. Like, I feel like she holds fashion up to the standard that I feel like it needs to be because if the standard
slip, blowing a bunch of hot air around, which is what a lot of people
if standards
do.
Slip, then there's like really nothing
then
to
what?
Stand on.
Yeah.
You know, like if anyone can start a fashion label and make millions of dollars, then what
and
the
have
fuck?
Great reviews.
Yeah. Then it doesn't mean anything to be in Vogue.
Yeah.
You know, true. Like there's no criteria that you need to meet to be at that standard, that level when, you can do a $900 sweatshirt with a graphic on it. And that's suddenly Vogue. But there's artisans and people all over the world who are doing amazing work. And
on a, such a different level. Levels.
Like, you know? Like on an intellectual level, on an artistic level, on a like a physical, technical level.
Fabrication level.
Fabrication. Like, yeah.
On a way smaller scale as well, which is always refreshing.
Or just screen printing a bunch of fucking sweatshirts.
Mm-hmm. Well, the face app you just made.
There's some nostril flaring and some lip pursing happening. So, yeah.
So it's like the industry and the criticism and the publications, they're all, it's like they all are so interconnected, but they don't work together most of the time.
Yeah.
It's like,
or they don't have to.
They don't have to. It, like,
yeah, that's right.
But they should.
It's like the way it is. It's like the designer dictates the trend, the magazine reports on it, and then the critic kind of comes in between the brand and the publication, wherever they are.
Mm.
And they can kind of be as critical or not as critical depending on where they are. And it's very interesting right now, especially like with the rise of the Vetements and all of that garbage. That
all these weird brands that are popping up now, weird shit.
Like that's the way that fashion is going. And if that's the way it's going, then it doesn't really mean anything to be in Vogue.
No.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And then there'll be other sort of, I hate to use the word influencers, but for lack of a better word, I'm going to use the word influencers. Like Man Repeller, or like, you know, Leandra Medine, and like that started out as this really small thing, and she had this weird opinion, and it started as this weird,
quirky personal style thing. Yep.
And it's, none of that is hard copy print. That is all digital. All of her content is
all it's
digital.
Ever been.
And it will never not be.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to put out she might put out a book or something, but it's not going to be a monthly publication kind of thing.
Like a coffee table book or something like that.
And it's instant. It happens right away. So you go to a show, even like watching Vogue, Vogue's Instagram, or like Susie Menke's, any critic or whatever.
Sure.
You can watch the show in real time on their Instagram. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Yep.
So why would you wait around for a magazine to come to you? Like, forget it. It's already old news by the time that magazine comes to you. Yeah. Unless there is some, you know, amazing investigation piece or like a history look at Dior over the, like anything that's a little more in depth.
Or there,
that would be way more interesting.
There could be more space. And for the longest time, like if you weren't a super deep fashion insider, you didn't know who the stylists were, who were putting together the editorial looks, the shopping pages, that sort of thing. You didn't know those names. You didn't know those people. But potentially, there's room there, I think, for the individual voices of stylists and people like that. And I forget the word I'm looking for, but the people who drive the visual content of the magazine.
Like fashion editor.
Yeah, the fashion editor, to have a more tailored point of view.
Yeah.
You know, like you can be your own stylist and do your own shit that is different than everybody else. Because one of the problems is of all these magazines is that all the editorials look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because they are playing to the masses.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying before I came.
And if you tailor that point of view a little bit more, you are going to buy Vogue magazine because
you want to know the
Evan
Vogue,
Ducharme editorial that he's put together this year is out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to happen like in the 90s and stuff when people were doing it and it was important and there was the designers were in on it, the photographers were in on it. There's too many names out there now. And there's not that many that seem to stand out.
That's sort of what I was talking, or what I was hoping to get at when I was talking about there's no experience backing it all up. It's anyone can, like Joe Blow can
make
an
a pretty
opinion
picture.
It doesn't mean it's
doesn't
mean it's right or valid or respectful or has any kind of
merit.
Insight or merit into the, you know, where things came from and blah 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 blah. And it's too anonymous almost.
There's a whole bunch of people functioning at one level. And I think there's room at the top for a whole new herd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows it.
It's hard to break through it. As a consumer, as somebody being in a position of being a photographer, you know, to make yourself stand out and not just have a girl jumping in front of a gray fucking background.
Tawny Goodman and her Gap ads.
Yep.
it's like the whole industry knows, especially in the magazine sector, knows that things need to change. And
Figuring it out.
Yeah, to get people to go back to a magazine, you need to make a magazine worth opening. You need to we can't just do the same thing that has been done forever, because that is, it's been well established that is better served through an online platform.
Yeah, and that time is done.
It's over. And it's like the people in charge of these magazines have a stale point of view, and it's just time for things to...
Yeah. You look at the stuff that Diana Vreeland was pushing. You look at the stuff that Grace Coddington was
Where's
doing.
Where's the Diana Vreeland
of this, now?
Of now.
That goes visionary. To Japan. That goes to fucked up places that do weird shit.
And that's the thing. If you only release 4 books a year, you can put the amount of budget for three books into one, and you can do these insane, beautiful, extravagant...
Go to this world.
Imagine photo they shoots. Did... they did a book for, or they did a magazine a quarter
per season.
Per season. So you get a pre-fall,
fall, spring resort.
Spring
whatever.
Resort, yeah.
Resort spring,
or cruise,
whatever, it is.
Whatever you want to call it. That would be,
that'd be pretty cool.
So great.
You could really, there'd be no filler.
Yeah, it would be all good. And obviously you couldn't do that on, like, you couldn't survive on just that. You'd have to have online content that is keeps up with the
daily,
of the day kind of thing.
Minutely.
Yeah. But that would be so
That'd
great.
Be really cool. Yeah.
Guys, somebody do that.
Yeah, not me.
No.
I don't have time.
Anna, I know, I know you're listening.
Let's take a meeting.
Anna.
let's set some time. Get in the boardroom. Call the stockholders. The board members.
Get them all in.
And we'll cut some checks. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Should we put a pin in this?
Yeah. We'll take a break.
My feet are getting cold, so now I have to pee.
There we go.
Time's good as any.
Yeah.
Let's go and then come right back.
I guess we should press record because we're sitting here talking about all kinds of very interesting things.
The most important things. Who is like, going to be on the crown?
Like, what does Paul Bettany look like? Yeah. Let's refresh our memories.
Why do you know? What is he from that
what
you remember? It's a Beautiful Mind.
Yes, absolutely.
For some people, including me.
My reference was Knight's Tale. I'm just saying.
What was the Avengers?
Also,
there's
all
this
Avengers.
Little movie called The Avengers of some kind.
Maybe one of the Captain Americas. I forget. They're all the same fucking movies.
It's all the same movie, just
it's all
different.
The same people.
It's all 3 hours long.
Yeah.
For no good goddamn reason.
God.
But anyway.
But Captain America's in it. I'm all over it.
What? Really?
I find him
very
attractive.
No, he's a farmhand, bro. Give me a break.
When I saw him in Scott Pilgrim, that changed things for me. Where he was like the shitty bro-y, but like extra, extra, like exponentially over the top movie star boyfriend.
Oh, skateboarded. He's too predictably attractive. He's too like, if you draw a picture of an attractive person, that's what he looks like. I don't care for it.
Sure. That's all right.
I'm not interested.
We're going to kick him out of it. Yeah, well, more for me?
I mean, he's all yours. you can have him.
You can get Paul Bettany.
You're okay.
Yeah. A tall British man.
I need a bit of a beard, though.
Yeah, he doesn't have much
of
that.
I need some scruffy.
Yeah, maybe not.
You know what? I'd be happier with Robert Downey Jr.
Well, there
to
you
be
go.
Honest.
Well, then there
but
you
not,
go.
But not in the Iron Man situation, in like a Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
Look.
Sure. Yes. Yes. Aesthetic.
I don't need that really sharply defined facial
that's
hair.
That's weird. Really and he's like weird. Overly tanned and whitened teeth.
Yeah.
Man, that's a little much.
You guys,
Evan,
is so important.
Which one would you like?
I'll take the redhead guy from Outlander.
Ooh, Sam Heughan. Yes, I would for sure take him.
I'm wearing my Claire Fraser coat today.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel
it's
like
long.
There's the scene
long
in
black coat.
There's a scene in Tu Wong Fu where she sits in the car and she's like, "I feel like Miss I feel like Miss Jean something." Fuck, it was
it was great.
I really fucked
you
up
guys
the line.
Google it. It's worth it.
Really
it's
fucked
worth
up
it.
The line. It's like, I feel like Miss Jean Tierney in this car. And whenever I put this jacket on, I'm like, I feel like Miss Claire Fraser in this coat. Hey. That Outlander is not my obsession, although I have been devouring it.
Mm-hmm.
It has beautiful men. It has nudity.
Yes.
Yeah. It has gorgeous costumes.
Does it have dude nudity?
Dude nudity.
Okay.
Not full frontal. Is there
a peen?
No, there's maybe like a little wiggle you see quickly.
You, see like a smidge of a head and it's like boop. Yeah.
You see the shadow of it.
We all did a very similar motion. Yeah. One or two fingers. But lots of boobies, I guess.
There's fucking, there's fighting.
There's really gory, like, surgery scenes. There's fantasy. There's sci-fi-ness. There's,
is there a good Scottish accent?
Oh, my God. Lots. Like a million?
Everywhere.
You know, when I changed my answer, I want Ewan McGregor.
Ooh, yeah.
He's my pick. For whatever thing we're talking
about. For whatever.
I wasn't into him until I saw him in the Star Wars movies, which were pieces of shit. But that's fucking sweet Jedi beard, man. Ooh, yeah. That's a good time. Yep.
That weird rat tail.
Weird off-center rat tail. Sign me up.
That Jedi rat tail. And off the shoulder.
Ding-a-ling.
Oh, shit.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I guess,
get back on track.
I guess that's Katie's obsession is weird Jedi rat tails.
Yep, that's it. I have it written down right here in my notes.
And mine is Jedi rats.
Weird Jedi rat tail. Anyway, moving on. Although I will say, I did see the new Star Wars and
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much.
It was an enjoyable film. What more do you want?
What is Star Wars?
Shut up, stop complaining.
My sister, who is 2 years older than me, had never seen the Star Wars, any of them, until this Christmas. So,
oh boy.
At some point when I was in like high school.
Get it together, Leslie. Come on.
At some point when I was in high school and my sister was older and was like not having it with the family.
Sure, not into it.
Because she shared a room with two other sisters, which was a nightmare. But anyway.
Oh, I bet. Not your favorite thing when you're 16.
She was not present for this, but my parents were like, they sat us down and we watched all of the original Star Wars that were out up until that point. This was before the new
ones.
Revamp,
sure.
Jar Jar Binks situations.
Yep.
And it was like, this is a life lesson. We're going to watch all of these.
This
and
is
it was
a
great.
Thing. Yeah.
Like it, and it was worth it. But she was not there that day.
Privy
she was,
that.
I don't know, smoking behind the
sure.
school somewhere.
Yeah, moping somewhere. Yeah.
And so she didn't participate for whatever reason. So she had never seen them. And we're like, are you, like my husband, Chris is like, wait, hold on, wait a minute. So you've never seen this at all ever? She's like, no. He's like, hey, wait, what do you mean like this one movie in particular or like all of them? She's like, no, all of them. He's like, okay, hang on. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. It was hilarious.
Wrap my brain around this.
I don't understand what you are saying. Anyway, I totally jumped on top of your obsession. Please go back.
I don't know who's starting.
I thought you said it's not my obsession, but
then we
went sideways.
My obsession is kind of an angry obsession.
Ooh,
something that got me fired up.
That's refreshing.
I follow just one of the Instagrammers I follow. Named HowNewen.jpg, had been looking through all the menswear shows and was doing a catalog of like how many people of color were in the cast.
Oh, that's fun!
And
that's
was like
set you up for disappointment. I'm
sure. And was like tagging all these brands, being like, "You had
the fuck, you have no
so and so look. Yeah. You had this many models. This is how many looks were worn.
100% white
color,
people.
Blah blah blah." And gave like a breakdown percentage, and was posting on their story like. And tagging all the brands and everything, and tagging the casting director, tagging the person
who beautiful.
Did all this shit, just calling
doing
people
good
out,
work.
Like the stylist and the casting director.
Nice.
So they did a post for the brand called Palomo Spain, which has kind of blown up in the last few years, like this super like queer femme menswear line where it's like silk chiffon, like robes with Swarovski crystal and like ostrich feather trim.
So you're super not into it.
Super, and I mean, like, I love
not
it.
Evan
I mean,
at
it's
all.
Cute. It's really, it's like, I mean, it's beautiful, but like, I don't really know who's wearing this kind of
sure.
thing.
Sure.
Outside of like a red carpet or like a movie set or something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a bit more pragmatic with
sure, your taste.
Sense.
Sure.
Yeah. But
so,
I mean, it was stunning.
Sure,
like, if I was ever going to go to
paper.
An award show.
Yeah, on paper.
Up until this point.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been like, oh, you know. Like, and it's all like, it's basically like evening wear and like costumes and fun stuff and like really extravagant, like Dior couture, like Jean Galliano's style.
Oh, wow.
But
cool.
In for menswear. And Howe posted 38 looks, 4 models of color, 34 white models, and tagged the casting director and the brand and the stylist for the show. And then the brand replied to their Instagram story, "So what?"
Clutching at pearls.
Oh,
how dare they?
Not smart. Not because I'm sure this person that kept it to themselves.
Oh no!
Of course.
Oh no!
Right? Oh yeah, yeah.
They're not going to screen grab that.
No, no, no.
Their post is pushing 500 likes.
Sounds about right.
500 likes, almost 100 comments. There's like about 25 of those are of people tagging Diet Prada.
Them fired up about it. You come say sorry to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or whatever.
And it's just like, this is so telling to this like new breed. There's like, and Paloma Spain is not like the only menswear brand that is taking this kind of femme approach, queer approach presently in fashion. And it's really interesting to me when people are jumping on this queer bandwagon that is pumping up, especially like we've talked about them and we've talked about like all of these other menswear, our quote-unquote menswear publications that have taken more of a non-traditional approach to their coverage.
Non-binary approach.
And for them for it to be so apparent that they're using this as a marketing tactic and using it for the cool factor.
Tokenism and stuff.
And tokenizing everything. Yeah. Because I'm just going to read the Wikipedia version of what queer means. Basically, according to Wikipedia, queer is the umbrella term for sexual and gender minorities who are not heterosexual or are not cisgender, meaning that cisgender is where you identify with the gender you were assigned at birth. But in the late 1980s, queer scholars and activists began to reclaim the word to establish a community and a certain identity distinct from the gay identity. People who reject traditional gender identities and seek a broader and deliberately ambiguous alternative to the label LGBT may describe themselves as queer. So basically,
you're not straight, but you're not gay.
You're not straight. You're not. Well, it's like if
you're both
and
neither.
From my brain, my understanding is queerness removes itself from the identity of gay because gay is very male centric.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's very male identifying and kind of and doesn't leave space for people who don't fall on the gender binary.
In that specific,
So when a brand like that really excludes people of color from their image, and queerness is so about providing space
inclusion
for people of color, queer people of color, or gay people of color, or lesbians of color, or anybody, like just
like sexual minorities of color. Whatever, yeah.
It's so telling that they're kind of throwing this kind of intellectual facade over their brands that they can get all of the they can cash in and they can have the cachet of having that kind of
that coolness
marketing they're using it as a marketing tactic.
Yeah.
It's not really part of the core and the DNA of the way they operate their brand.
Oh, they just really put it out on the table.
Oh, they just really stuck their foot in it.
Oh, boy.
Whew.
And I had a discussion.
Somebody pressed send before they thought about it. Should have just taken a second and thought about it for a second.
You guys, should I rate this? No? Absolutely not? No? Okay.
Yeah. It's obviously like there's also the argument that not a lot of people, especially in places that are not North America or
Europe even.
Or like, well, because Palomo is a Spanish company and they don't have as much access to queer theory and higher education and especially the academic work that's being done in places like Canada and the US, especially when it comes to queer identities.
Gender studies
and everything like that. It's like you can't really expect everyone to come onto that level playing field, but then at the same time, there's also the argument that because we live in a global society,
in this day and age, there's no excuse.
Not everyone who's talking about these issues has a degree in queer studies or gender studies. Like you can go on the internet that everyone has access to and learn about these things, especially if you're making it part of the identity of your company.
Part of me is like, I'm kind of pumped about it that they fucked up.
Me too.
Because this is a good teachable moment.
Yeah, this is a teachable moment,
moment to grow.
If
you're smart.
If you're smart, you've fucked up and you are distancing yourself
from
the people.
Remove your foot from your mouth.
Yeah, you're distancing yourself from your customer, the farther in you dig yourself in this one.
And of all the industries, the fashion, come on. It takes me back to the episode of America's Next Top Model where one of the potential contestants was talking about how she didn't like gay people. Yeah. Like, you're going to be a model in the fashion industry. This, and you don't like, get the fuck out of here.
Like, you are actually not going to be a model.
This is not for you. So you're in the fashion industry, and this is what you're presenting.
Especially at this moment in time where representations of race in fashion is everywhere.
It's under a microscope.
It's not like every fashion season, there's a breakdown of how many models of color were on every catwalk,
and it's percentage
by city
better.
And by fashion event and like men's and women's shows and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, it's like when the brands that you expect to get it right, get it so incredibly wrong. What does that say about the state of the rest of the industry where like Versace's bottom line and their identity doesn't rest on them having to do anything like that.
Yeah.
I wonder what the repercussions now will be. Is that guy going to get fired? Is the brand going to just
carry on? This is a small company. I wouldn't doubt it if the creative director runs the Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote that post?
See, I'm thinking of somebody who's like too emotionally attached to this wrote that mm-hmm. and pressed send too quickly when they should have thought about mm-hmm. it. The PR person wouldn't have done that.
And I'll tell you right now,
it's somebody
who color didn't write that.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's some white people bullshit.
Y-T-P-E-E-P-O.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Well, I wonder what will.
You're just hoping that they can learn.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, exactly. Keep your eyes on that for us.
I got my eyes on the streets for this.
There you go, for that particular thing.
Oh, man.
Awesome. Well, not awesome, but you know what I mean.
So what?
I love it because it's like
so shitty.
I've been burned so often by being like, oh my God, I love this. Look what they're doing. It's so great. And now I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to give them a year and see if they stick their foot in it.
Let's see how they fuck this up. Yeah. Let's see
how they will fuck this up and what level of fucked upness it will be. Is it excusable?
On the sliding scale of how fucked up.
Yeah.
This is probably somewhere teetering somewhere close to a 10.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Far up.
It's above a 5, but it's not a 10.
Not quite a 10 yet.
And like, if that's what you really feel and you're going to say it, don't say it to the guy who's calling you out on it already.
Say it to the guy next to you. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Say it say it over the phone to your friend. Don't say it in writing, you dumb asshole. Anyway.
Or,
it's one of the things that I do like about.
Or if you're being called out, take the information and apply it.
Yeah.
It's just like, and who knows, like maybe people think because there's never models of color in fashion shows that
they're off the hook.
They can have 4 models in a cast of 38 and
that's enough.
And it'll be enough. Because most shows don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gosha Rubchinsky had a fashion show of 50 looks and there was not one model of color. They were all white, like Hitler Youth looking dudes.
Yikes.
There is one thing though that like, this movement right now that's happening where people are calling each other out on stuff and Trump in office and all this shit and Harvey Weinstein and all this stuff that's coming up. It's like everybody's secrets are coming out on the table. Oh, yeah. And once they're out on that table, you can't unsee them. They're not going back into the closets, right? Like, so it's,
and the only way to move forward is to own it.
Yeah.
Those skeletons are rattling.
They're rattling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is nice to see. That's why it kind of like pumps me up. It's like, oh, okay. Who else is going to fuck this up too?
Yeah. Who was called out today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. We've had this conversation a few times with a group of friends of mine. And it's like, well, who's going to be next? Like Kevin Spacey? Like there are a handful of people who I will be surprised by.
If yes, absolutely.
Like any of these sexual assault allegations.
What do you mean James Franco's a creep? Didn't see that one coming. Yeah. Crying out loud.
Yeah, it's just like,
boy. Anyway.
And it's like, when are you going to get called out?
Yeah.
Creepy motherfucker.
Yeah.
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 Bide my time until you get called out.
Yeah.
Someone comes forward.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, anyway, we could talk for
good on you.
Ever on this.
Oh, what was the guy's name? The account?
How Nguyen. HAONGUYEN.JPG.
Gotcha.
On the gram.
All right. Interesting.
Good to know.
Great content.
Have a look. Excellent.
Abby, what are you obsessed with? I can see it.
Like, yeah, I brought it out of the bean. It just happened to work out. I had this obsession before we even knew this is our concept of magazines. I splurged and got myself the Vogue Paris Collections Spring Summer 2018. This is its own kind of magazine. It's a big motherfucker. They're like $30, $40. I was telling the guys upstairs, I actually prefer the L collections because I think they're more interesting visually, but I didn't see that at Chapters when I was in there. They only had the Vogue one. Mm-hmm. But this is what people used to look at before the internet. You would get one of these. And it's a curated selection because it's not everything, but it's the bigger names, the more influential people, or the new upcomers, the new voices, the it brands.
Movers and the Shakers.
Coming up. The Movers and the Shakers. 132 designers, 1,260 looks, 1,608 accessories. So they literally go through all the shows or all the important shows, have a selection of, I don't know, a dozen to 20 looks from every show. And you just go through and you can see the styling, you can see the accessories, you can see the models, you can, you know, there's some interviews in the front and some written content, but 90% of the magazine is only images.
It's awesome.
And it is beautiful to flip through. The first half is all shows, and the second half is, or actually maybe the last third, maybe. It's just like a big grid. There's shoes and bags and hats and sunglasses and jewelry and all sorts of accessories and things. Again, every double page is a brand. And it's just beautiful and fun. And see, this is the type of magazine that could potentially
be the new format.
Be the new format. Now, this is essentially Vogue.com runway.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's that in paper form. Instead of just clicking next image, next thing, next image, it's you just flip a page and you get to see. And this isn't every image from every show because they're not going to show all 80 looks from Armani. Get a grip on Armani.
Barf.
Nobody cares about Armani. But it's, again, it's like this is something tangible, beautiful, purposeful.
Ads?
And no ads. I don't think there's any ads.
You must have to pay.
Oh, maybe
to be
on the inside.
Participate.
There's on the inside cover. That's a Vogue ad, a Vogue for itself. And yeah, like there's none Feathers. On the inside.
You must have to pay to be a part of it.
Yeah, I don't know the financial model behind this, how this works.
Yeah.
But there must be some sort of, because it's a big
But it
fucker.
Is also, there's fewer ads also because it costs $30 to buy instead of
$7.99 or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's full of ads. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, like I said, I found the L1 a little bit more stylized and a little bit more interesting to look at, but it's the same concept. And it's just super fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
And it's cool and different. And it comes out twice a year.
It's a good
time.
It's a good one.
I used to try to get them as much as I could, but I haven't got one in years. And we were saying before, we've all kind of fallen off the bandwagon of paying attention to all the stuff that's happening. But I want to get back on.
Yeah, we have a fashion podcast, but we don't pay attention to fashion
and
anymore.
And I do love it. I just couldn't. I didn't make the time for it the past, I don't know, four seasons. But like couture stuff's happening now, and I want to get back on that. And
I mean, you also made a human being.
You make two human beings.
Make two human beings. And now they're old enough so I can like spend some time away from them and, you know, actually allocate.
Reinvest in
Yes,
in fashion.
Exactly. Yeah. And the time and the effort. And like we were saying before the podcast, we pressed record. There's a lot happening now in the brands and the big houses and
things are shifting.
Things are shifting. New people are coming. Old people are leaving. New brands are popping up that like in the 2 years I haven't been paying attention, all of a sudden there's like Jacquemus is everywhere. And it's great.
Jacquemus. I take umbrage with a lot of things. I just don't think it's very nice clothes, and I think he gets a lot of press because he's pretty. Move on.
Sure. But it's interesting. But they're new and interesting.
Yeah, exactly,
and new
yeah.
talent, and I'm all for new talent, whether I like it or not.
I think he basically does Parenza Schuller light.
But like more
but
weird.
But sexy.
And more weird.
And weird.
Yeah.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Anyway, see? Time
I'm
to get back on.
The loop.
Time to get back in the loop.
Yeah.
You can figure out all these people.
Yeah.
And then see, you know, I missed all this Kim guy at Louis Vuitton. I missed all of his shows. I didn't do any. And then
the
I,
men's shows?
Yeah. No, even the women.
And the
women's too. Didn't
yeah.
They? But they were looking back at his stuff and I'm like, you know what? These are kind of cool.
They were very futuristic. It was like,
yes.
yeah.
And I'm like, how did I miss this whole,
gorgeous.
How did I miss this whole varsity jacket thing? That was cool with all the patches and stuff. Mm-hmm. I dig that. I totally missed all that.
Well, you were making children.
Yeah, but fashion, right?
I know that.
But Vuitton.
I know it's an important part, like Vuitton. I'm not talking about Joe Nobody.
You're right.
Man. So anyway, I'm excited about this magazine.
And well, I didn't miss anything in Chanel. It's been the same thing for the last decade.
Whole bunch of unwearable tweed. Great. Yep. And like, he's obsessed with that weird see-through fabric that's like in every accessory for like 5 years.
But he has a beard now.
Yeah.
And he looks like an old weird man.
Is it looking like a
wizened old wizard?
Oh, that looks like a weird old man who looks like a super weird, very old man. Anyway.
Take a break, Carl. It's time.
Boy.
I would just sleep on all my piles of money if I was him.
Right? He has all the money. His brain has been so turned on for so long, I bet he cannot turn his brain off.
I bet he would die if he stopped.
Absolutely. He would just collapse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That energy sustains him.
Mm-hmm.
His weird Mr. Burns. Yes, his weird Mr. Burns body, where it's just like no medically explainable way on how he's still alive.
He has no heartbeat.
Functioning.
Yeah. His blood runs cold.
I love the idea of Carl's Mr. Burns body.
Carl is the Mr. Burns of fashion.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent.
Who's the Miss Kerbopple of fashion?
Susie Minkies?
Yeah, maybe.
No, but who like? No, I think the Miss Kerbopple of fashion is the critic. We talked about fashion critics earlier. We didn't even mention the great
Hillary. What's her name?
Not Hillary. The one who got kicked out of the Saint Laurent show because they gave him a bad review. She gave him a bad review.
Oh yeah, I'm totally blanking on her.
Blanking on her name.
Anyway,
we're out of the loop.
See, we love fashion.
Love it. It's important to us. Oh, boy. Well, Catherine, what have you got?
I have something unfashion related.
Excellent.
Fashion unrelated? I don't know how to say that.
This has been too much fashion this episode.
Too much fashion on this fashion podcast.
You guys talk too much about clothes.
Real life shit. So, there is a... So back in October, I got on the whole Jezebel spooky scary story.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And down that rabbit hole, I found this this weird story that's sort of been called Dear David.
Ooh, I know some of it, but I know there's been updates that I'm not aware of.
So Dear David, and I didn't realize this, but Dear David comes from this guy who is actually an artist and an illustrator. His name is Adam Ellis. His Instagram is hilarious. It's called Adam Tots. He has
T-O-T-S?
T-O-T-S.
Okay.
And it's like cartoons. He has this hilarious cartoon that I laugh at every other day about Hagrid telling Harry Potter he's a wizard.
You're a wizard, Harry.
And he's like, I'm a what? And he like says like four or five times. He's like, you're a wizard. He's like, a what? He's like, Harry. He's like, I'm a what? He's like, you're a wizard. He's like, fuck off. Anyway, it's this hilarious cartoon. So I didn't realize that this was the same guy, but it's the same guy. His Twitter account is at @Moby_dickhead.
Okay.
And he has done this thing called a Storify, and he's basically, which I guess is when you compile a bunch of your own tweets into a story, like a long thread, so it turns into a kind of a story. And it's sort of been called Dear David, and it started back in August, and it is a spooky, scary ghost story about this ghost kid who lives in his apartment or doesn't. Like,
is it
people
real?
Are like, is it a hoax? Yeah. Is it not? Regardless of whether or not it's legit, it is a super scary story. It is definitely worth reading. He just updated like five days ago. There's like weird pictures that he takes of like his hallway and weird shit happening and his cats going crazy and videos of his cats and shit just falling off the walls for no good reason. Things, he goes out of town for a while and he sets up one of those cameras that are like motion sensitive.
Oh, motion activated or whatever, yeah.
And it sends you like a text or like a notification or something when something happens in your apartment. So there's just weird shit like that. But it starts with this nightmare that he has with this kid named David, and he draws a picture of what he sort of looks like, and he has this, he's like a young kid, and he has this like dent.
His head's missing or something.
Yeah, he has this like weird dent out of his head. And he's like six, maybe five or six or something. And anyway, this whole story like chronicles his all of these like spooky encounters with David, and he comes to him in a dream, and you know, you can have these conversations with him, and you can ask him questions. You can ask him two questions, but you can't ask him a third question, or he'll kill you, and all of this like really spooky, weird shit that I had to like put the phone down. Like, no, I can't
look away for a while.
I can't look at that picture. That picture is too scary. And but now it's like turned into quite a thing, and now there's articles about like, is this real? Is it a hoax? And is it, you know, speculation that it's just a book deal that he's promoting or like whatever it is. But regardless, it is a spooky story that I highly recommend. I'll put a link to it. Read the whole thing if you can get through the whole thing, because there's quite a few tweets. It started in August and he just updated a few days ago. But there's like,
yeah, I gotta go back and read it, because I read it like when it first came out, it was circulating.
Yeah, so I don't know what turned me on. I think it was like one of the comments in a Jezebel story.
Oh, sure, referenced it or linked to it or something.
But if you like a good
spooky scary,
and there's pictures that are like explain that bullshit to me. Like there's this one, I don't want to spoil too much about it, but there's this one where he's like, he lives in this apartment building. And he takes a photo on his like iPhone with the door of his apartment leading out to the hallway, with the door of his apartment open. And it's fine. It looks like a normal picture. And then he takes a photo with a Polaroid instant film camera.
Oh, sure.
And you can see it's the same door frame inside. Everything on the inside of the apartment is the same. And it is just a wall of black in the hallway outside. And he's like, some people think this is that I made this up and then I just
weird trick put this or all something. Weird
together. Yeah. But so then he takes a video of him taking a picture with his iPhone and then a video of him taking a picture with the Polaroid, and they come up the same way. It is like, I don't know how you would hoax that shit up. I mean, it's possible, I'm sure, but it is like chills.
Is that doorway? Oh, is that door frame a portal to another dimension?
Who knows?
I mean, who knows?
Now you're thinking with portals.
And the cats all go crazy at a certain time of day, like at midnight, like every day, both the cats go like a little spooky. Yeah, it's good. It's really good. And then you just keep seeing weird things.
Oh, I fully believe in a spook.
You should, you'll like it. Yeah, it's good. And also just follow his Instagram, because the cartoons on his Instagram are really funny. So yeah, Marvelous. Dear David. If you just Google Dear David Twitter, it'll come up.
Sure, I'm sure there's even like a Reddit about it or something where you don't have to scroll through all of Twitter or something. There's
no, but if you, it's at the very, very top. If you go to his thing, the Storify
thing, or oh, okay,
I think is pinned there.
Gotcha.
It's the very first pinned tweet.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm gonna reread that later. I'm scaring the shit out of myself.
It's good.
Better do it before dark. Ooh.
I know. There's. I just like glanced through the updates really quick, and I was like, oh, I gotta go back and read it a little more. But that's good. It's a good one. You feel like a little chill.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Oh, marvelous.
Yes, yes, yes. Again, fashion on topic.
Yes,
finger
always
on the pulse.
Never not fashion. Awesome. Well, it's lovely to be back in studio.
Yeah.
Jokers.
Nice, good break.
Start off another year, 2018. Onwards and upwards.
Bring it
forwards. If anything, forwards, please. Can we progress
and always
and move forward?
Twirling, twirling, twirling. Speaking of The Simpsons.
Oh, well.
Anyway,
thanks for listening.
You can find us in all of the usual places.
Yes.
The Instagram.
Mm-hmm. We haven't done an Instagram in a while.
We took a break off from everything.
From everything.
Yeah.
I think we all needed to just lie down for a while.
Yeah. Take a minute. I'm just going to nap right here. Just going to lay down.
Real quick.
Yeah. But find us. And then you can also come on back in a couple weeks.
Because we'll be back here.
Mm-hmm.
In a couple weeks. We'll be here. Who knows what we're going to talk about? We haven't figured it out yet.
If there's something you guys want to hear about, tell us.
Let us know.
So we're trying to line up some interesting guests for the new year. Maybe we'll have to see.
Guests are fun.
Who we can wrangle.
We got a list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some fires. Fires in the coal. Coal in the fire.
Coals in the fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hot. We got hot coals. Yes. One of those.
We got it. Awesome. Well.
You? You did it right.
Yeah.
We love you.
We love fashion more. Bye.